Welcome to the Embodiment Conference. My name is. Oh, that is just not going to work at all. Oh, never accept a dare from Mark Walsh. Welcome to the Embodiment Conference. My name is Leslie Kaminoff, and you may know me as the co-author of the international bestseller, Yoga Anatomy. But I'm also the co-founder of yogaanatomy.net. Now, that's a platform we built 11 years ago where we offer online courses and in-depth anatomy modules that support teachers, teacher trainings, and students all over the world. So that's why we are thrilled to be sponsoring all the incredible sessions here on the Yoga Channel, including my own. And if you feel a connection with the way I teach, I have some great news for you. We are extending scholarships to all members of the Embodiment Conference. And you can find that scholarship info and links to yogaanatomy.net in the description for this presentation and in the show notes. In the meantime, enjoy your body, enjoy your breath, and enjoy your conference. And I'll see you online.
Hello, and welcome to Monday morning at the 6 o'clock slot for the Embodiment Conference. And we have James and Josephine with us here, and they will be presenting their topic, which is Prison Yoga Project and Freedom from the Inside. I just want to introduce them properly. Josephine Wilkstrom is the Prison Yoga Project's Program Director and Training Coordinator for Europe. She lives in Sweden, where she teaches yoga and movement at a high security women's prison and at a maximum security men's prison. She has co-created the Swedish evidence-based program, Prison Yoga Program, CRYM Yoga. She is currently developing therapeutic programs and staff training for Sweden's forensic psychiatry units and their juvenile justice system. She is a licensed minded yoga therapist for working within healthcare systems. Additionally, she has extensive trainings in the field of trauma therapy and with the Trauma Center in Boston, Massachusetts, and the Trauma Research Foundation. She has taught teacher trainings for PYP in Europe, the US, Israel, Mexico, and India, where she helped establish yoga programs in women's jails. And she has been working as a full-time teacher, focusing on yoga for trauma-exposed populations since 2003. And James Fox, MA, is the founder of Prison Yoga Project, and he is a certified yoga instructor who has dedicated himself to developing a trauma-informed approach to teaching yoga in correctional facilities. That has resulted in the establishment of yoga programs in prisons throughout the US, Mexico, Europe, Australia, and other countries. He is a practitioner of yoga and mindfulness meditation for more than 30 years. Upon receiving his teaching credentials in 2000, James began his mission of sharing the benefits of yoga with incarcerated people. He has taught yoga classes at San Quentin Prison since 2002. He is also trained in restorative justice principles and practices and has experience facilitating victim offender education, emotional literacy, and violence prevention courses for prisoners. So I turn it over to you too, and maybe you could begin to lay out what you're going to do and talk about today. Thanks very much.
Good morning, everyone. I will be the one who will start this session this morning. And I'm connecting with you guys from the Swedish forest, early morning. And wherever you are, it might be afternoon, it might be evening, as it is for James. I was thinking to invite you into a embodiment practice. This is what this conference is all about. So this is an invitation to join me in some movements. Arriving into the body and inside the women's prison where I facilitate these classes weekly, we call this catching or gathering the storm. So coming from this stressful environment, starting to come into some movements with the body. So the first invitation is to rub your hands together to see if you can notice the feeling in between your hands and perhaps creating some heat. Being in Sweden, I need to really go for it here to feel some heat in between my hands. And then take this to create some space around you. So whatever movements you feel like doing. And everything I am modeling here is just an invitation. So whatever you feel like doing, you can sit in stillness or you can move around. Now we'll do this one more time to get a clear put signal of that this is my body right now. And maybe shake things off or move around your joints. Then find a position that would be beneficial for you right now. It might be standing up, it might be sitting on a chair. You might be want to stay on the floor. But here we usually start with tensing our muscles. So engaging all the muscles of the body and then letting go, releasing. And noticing if there's a natural way of breathing arriving with this movement. If that felt good, you can try that two more times. So engaging those fight flight muscles. And then letting go and noticing the difference. It might be a little shake coming up. Maybe one more time. Even the face. And then letting go. And maybe move your jaw side to side. See if you can let go of that chain of tension that normally comes around the forehead, around your eyes, around the jaw, the shoulders, the hands, maybe even the belly. And then the felt sense of your body connected to the floor. So the feeling of your feet against the floor, the weight of your body towards the chair. Then noticing that under the building we have the earth holding us. No matter where we are in the world, we are connected through this connection. Then we're gonna create some movements quite straight ahead to kind of catch that storm. So the next invitation is to move your arms up and down. And if you choose to synchronize with your breathing today, you might try to add some breath. And if you're feeling like you want to discharge something, maybe you want to move faster, or if you want to slow down something, you can move a little bit slower. So if you want to regulate a little bit down, if you're feeling anxious or stressed, and perhaps exhaling long when the arms are coming down. So three more times in your own pace, your own movement. So you're in control of this movement. While you're moving like this, noticing how it feels, even out into your fingertips, the clothes touching your skin. And perhaps the last time. And feel free to add any movements that you like. Then again, perhaps the shoulders up to the ears and rolling the shoulders down, and sometimes it's possible to notice some tension that we build up naturally during the day or maybe during sleep. First one direction and then maybe the other direction. Then you can try to shake your shoulders up and down. And then again, perhaps increasing the tension into that muscle chain and then completely letting go. Okay, so the next is a little sequence that we do to catch the concentration. So there is a lot of things going on in the room usually. So it looks like this. I'm just going to show you first. So I'm bringing my arm up to sense if I can feel a stretch in the side of the rib cage. And then the next looks like this. I'm engaging the muscle of my arm. And then I'm pushing something away in front of me. And noticing the feeling of this pushing away. So maybe you can release some frustration that you might have built up during the day. Then we're going to change sides. So you can join me if you like. So I'm moving one arm up to the side. And when I'm leaning to the side, I can notice that I feel a stretch into the side of the chest. And then I'm really engaging the muscles of my arms. And then almost like in slow motion, pushing that hand forward. Noticing the feeling around the shoulder into the hand and then letting go, perhaps shaking that arm out. In your own time, over to the other side. So synchronizing together in movement, rhythmical movements together. It's wonderful because I can see you moving now approximately the same pace. And then see if you can let go. Okay, so one more time on each side in your own time, and maybe bring the breathing into this. So perhaps inhaling. Exhaling, really make that arm strong. When I'm inhaling, I'm lifting my chest, feeling the sensation of that body language, and then exhaling, pushing something away. And the breathing is your free choice. One more time to the other side. Maybe inhaling, lifting the chest. And perhaps a slow exhalation, pushing something away. Okay, and then both arms. So you can try to lift both arms and engage with this body language. So how does it feel to lift your arms right up and lift your chest up to the sky? And then exhaling, engaging the muscles of both arms. So now together, so we're in this together, lifting the chest up, really engaging the muscles of the arms, perhaps exhaling, pushing both arms forward. Maybe one more time. So you can find really strength into the arms, the muscles of the arms. And this time there's an invitation to stay here a little bit, but notice that you're in control of always releasing whenever you would like to. When I'm here, I can notice different sensations in my arms. So I can sense the muscles of my lower arms. When I'm pushing my hands forward, I can also feel the fingertips, even the palms of my hands. You can stay here breathing through this challenge if you like. I'm going to count us down from 5, 4, 3, 2, and releasing. Maybe shake things off a little bit. Okay, and then any movement that you would add right now, maybe there is a neck stretch or a little circles around the shoulders. And here I'm now placing my seat at the edge of the chair so I can really notice and feel the connection between my feet and the earth again. If you like, we can stay here in 1 minute now to notice how it feels to be centered in the middle of all of these movements. And if it feels good for you, noticing the pace of your breathing, so the heartbeat might have gone up from all of these breaths and movements as they naturally do. And you can exhale a bit longer through your mouth if you like, to start to lower your heartbeat. So recalling this, pulling the brake, learning how to regulate the heartbeat as a superpower. Trying to relax the forehead, around the eyes, around the jaw, the shoulders, the belly, the hands. Back to the felt sense of the weight of your body towards the chair, the floor. The connection between your feet firmly on the ground. Then in your own time, maybe lifting the shoulders up towards the ears. And if you had your eyes closed, you can slowly open your eyes. I normally end the classes in Sweden, especially with the women, where there is a lot of shame-based identity, with like a sign like this, lifting our arms up and reminding everybody about you are the best in the world and see you next week. So that's the final sequence, and then placing the hands together as a reminder of that inner basic goodness and your inner guiding light. And with that, I'm leaving the word over to James, that will introduce our project and also talk a little bit more about what we are encountering inside these facilities that we're entering worldwide.
Well, thank you, everybody. And greetings from California, where I am. I'm just north of San Francisco, which is where the Prison Yoga Project got its start, which was at San Quentin Prison, where I've been teaching for the last 18 years. And I very much miss practicing with Josephine. Usually we spend September together in Europe, teaching in Europe. And of course we missed our European teaching schedule, training schedule this year because of the coronavirus. But hopefully we'll be there again next year. And one of the things that's very different about us, you know, the participants in our programs, the participants in our classes are not the typical kind of person that you find in a public yoga class. So a good deal of our training is concentrated on how do we as facilitators of classes, and we specifically call ourselves facilitators rather than teachers, because we recognize that when you set up a paradigm of teacher and student, that you're automatically setting up a hierarchy. The teacher's the one who has the information. The student is the one who goes to the class to learn from the teacher. A facilitator is a person who facilitates a process, and hopefully in what we're doing, a process of healing. And in that process, everybody meets each other where they are. So one of the things that I'm fond of saying is, everybody teaches and everybody learns. So that it's very important for us to meet those people, particularly in an incarcerated environment where people are typically treated for the worst thing they ever did in their life. It's very important for us to be able to initiate the healing process by meeting them on an equal level, by meeting them as human beings with dignity, with empathy, because that in and of itself begins the healing process. So in our training that we do, we have a foundational training and then we have additional training. But in our training, before we even get to actually talking about yoga, we talk about the inequalities and the inequities that you find in a population of incarcerated people. So for instance, you know, whether you're in the United States or whether you're in the United Kingdom or whether you're in Mexico or whether you're in Israel, you can take society and you can look at all of the economic and the social inequalities. You can look at the racial inequalities, and the distillation of all those inequalities you find with people who are incarcerated. You feel it concentrated in an incarcerated environment. You see and you feel the differences of class, for instance. And so it's very important that if you're going to be able to go into an environment like that and you're going to facilitate, that you have a very clear issue of these social inequalities, these racial inequalities, these class inequalities. So what happened is that we started the program. I actually started the program here in the United States, and it naturally grew with its beginnings at San Quentin Prison. And we began our teacher trainings in 2010. And the program initially began to expand in the United States, but by invitation, I was invited to Europe and began to teach in Europe. First, actually in Scandinavia, in Norway, and then later in the Netherlands, and then Sweden and France and Germany. And so the program has expanded really throughout the world. We now have programs in Israel, Australia, India. And of course, our programs in the United States are spread out through about 20 different states in the US. Another very important component, I haven't even gotten to our trauma-informed methodology, which Josephine is going to talk about. But a very important understanding of what it is that we do is that what we do fits within the framework and an umbrella of restorative justice. So the justice system throughout the United States, throughout Europe, throughout most of the years, throughout most of the world is called retributive justice or punitive justice. Justice is equated with punishment. So restorative justice looks at justice in a different way. It looks that when an offense occurs, harm has been caused a person or people or a community. So the focus of restorative justice is on addressing the harm that's been caused. First and foremost, the harm that's been caused the victim of an offense, the victim of a crime, or the survivor of a crime. And secondarily, the harm that's been caused the perpetrator. And really looking at how could a person who commits a serious offense, particularly a violent offense, do such a thing? What are the issues that are the origins of committing that kind of an offense? So really looking at the harm that's been caused a person that's enabled them to cause further harm. Or one of the ways that we put it here in the United States is hurt people hurt people. And not being able to deal with the harm that it has been caused the person, typically previously in life, early in life, causes a person to cause more harm. But then there's a step beyond that that we're particularly focused on in the US right now, which is transformative justice. So one of the main issues in working with offenders in the restorative justice model is helping them to take personal responsibility for the harm that they caused. So that for any possibility for empathy to be created, there needs to be an understanding of the harm that I caused another individual. Transformative justice takes it a step further and looks at what is society's and institutions within society, what's their responsibility in setting up the conditions that have brought about harmful behavior. And once again, we go back to these inequities, these inequalities, the social inequalities, the racial inequalities, the class inequalities that cultures, institutions basically set up that cause people to commit offenses. And of course, you know what's going on in the US these days, focusing on racial issues, focusing on the criminal justice system's role in perpetrating inequalities and perpetrating criminal behavior in and of itself. And this is, of course, coming to a head right now with the election coming up, because it's so very clear that there are two very distinct ways of approaching these societal issues. So when we begin this work, and we're actually working with people who are incarcerated and come from these backgrounds of inequality, one of the first things that we encounter in the healing process is backgrounds of trauma and issues of unresolved trauma. So I'm going to hand it over to Josephine to talk about trauma.
Yes, so as James is mentioning, it is a international phenomena. So wherever we go in the world, also here in Sweden, we encounter the histories, the backgrounds of the people that we have in our classes is, I would say 99% of them, the stories behind are coming from adverse childhood experiences. And also, you know, the multi-layer of trauma. So I think we're working with the most trauma-exposed populations in the world, I would like to say. And if you're seeing into also the epigenetics, I would like to take it like all the way from the background. So many of the people that I meet weekly are coming from families with backgrounds of trauma. So maybe even in the epigenetics, you are kind of vulnerable already when you're born for stress and also developing mental health issues. That can of course be reversed if you're growing up into a safe environment and having a childhood where you're being cared for and seen and getting all your needs met, but also then ongoing developmental trauma where the brain is developing in crucial ages. So in the same person, that kind of sense of lack of safety and predictability is not there. So you see developmental trauma, epigenetics. We see also then complex trauma growing up with the ongoing trauma of maybe having a parent that's incarcerated or having mental health issues or drug abuse issues in the family. And then again, trauma like PTSD type 1, because you're exposed to violence and also maybe yourself starting to self-medicate with drugs and alcohol, which is of course the most natural thing to do if you have that kind of environment around you, because drugs and alcohol can really regulate a brain impacted from trauma like that. And one of the main causes for ending up in a prison is usually drug abuse in the background. So that can create the criminal behavior also to get the finances for your drug abuse. And then looking into a new attachment system. So then the same person is maybe finding a new kind of family, familiar way or a new attachment in a gang. So then you are in a criminal environment where you feel a sense of belonging. So all of this is setting up for being incarcerated. So maybe the traumatic stress or unresolved trauma that James is talking about is also one of the main reasons for ending up in prison in the first place. So it's a really complex, it's a real complexity that we are encountering in each individual, I would say, when we are facilitating our classes inside the prisons. So what we are doing, we are bringing in an embodied practice into these environments. And if we're looking into the research around emotional trauma or psychological trauma and also physical trauma today, we know that the trauma is held inside the body. And for having any chance of encouraging rehabilitation inside these environments, the embodiment is crucial. So how would you ever learn how to regulate your strong emotions? So we see a massive impact from mental health issues behind the walls, inside the prisons, everywhere. And this is international. So the prison systems today are the most unequipped mental health institutions in the world. And there is nowhere in the world where embodiment practices are recognized as a therapeutic intervention. So that is what we are trying to implement, because what we're seeing from the practices bringing in embodiment as a way of facing the trauma, or kind of trying to provide basic tools for regulating these inner states that they are experiencing, the body is key. And there are, you know, like aggression treatment programs inside the prisons today. There is CBT, there is all of these treatment modalities, and there is a lot of medication. But do we really reach the core of the trauma? If we're seeing that this is an imbalance inside the autonomic nervous system and the central nervous system on a biological level, but then also on a relational level, there is, where can you get that need met, you know? So if you don't learn how to move and feel your body in a mindfulness way, matter, where you start to recognize the signals from your body when you're starting to get angry, starting to develop impulse control, and also, you know, to start to recognize your own behavioral patterns. And this is what we see by bringing in these practices inside the prisons. And for many of them, they report to us that they feel, okay, my aggression therapy, for the first time in my life, I can actually feel that for real inside my body. I can now recognize the signs when I'm starting to get agitated or I'm starting to get frustrated, and I have learned how to stop and take a few deep breaths before I act and react. And that creates the entire difference inside these environments. So here in Sweden, we had the largest randomized research study in the world. And here we saw a massive difference. We saw a significant difference and improvement in real trauma signs or symptoms. So we saw a reduction of anxiety. We saw an improvement in depression. And what was really striking is that we also saw an improved sense of belonging and empathy. And that is only from 10 weeks of a yoga practice inside of the prisons. Once a week, I would say, with no side effects as the medications are giving. So by medicating these men and women inside the prisons over here, you're kind of putting the lid on top of what we are calling trauma on simmer. Because we have all of this multi-layered trauma in one and each individual. And then you can add on that we are in a confined environment. And that aggravates the trauma symptoms. So if you're thinking about it, when you're in perceived danger or in a traumatic event, what your body wants to do is to run away from the danger, or, you know, move actively from a danger. So here we have the entire global prison population in a forced freeze or collapse with a full fight flight response going on. And there is actually nowhere where you have the possibilities to discharge this stress in a healthy manner, in a safe community of it, like we have in a yoga class, where you can feel a safe connection together with other people. Wordlessly, I would say. And this is important because looking into the neurobiology of the brain, the speech center is also a little bit offline. So it's difficult to express your thoughts, emotions, and reactions if you don't have the means of regulating yourself. And also, as James was mentioning with restorative justice and transformative justice. So if you want to take amends for the harm you have caused other people, then you also need to know how to regulate those strong emotions and know how to handle those strong emotions in order for you to forgive yourself and also to feel compassionate for the victims that you have caused the pain to. So there's a whole complex process of rehabilitation inside these environments. So at the end of the day, so who do we want to re-enter society again? That is the core of our mission, basically. So providing simple practices to keep it real for the environments where we are, and to provide this sense of empowerment from knowing that growing up with a trauma in my family and my background has caused me to react normally, considering the abnormal events I have been exposed to. And that is our psychoeducation, to bring in this empowerment to these people that we meet, for them to be able to re-enter society in a safe way and be a caring citizen and also a functioning citizen after their punishments. So I'm really aware of the time. This is going so fast. We're used to having so many more minutes to talk. Did I miss anything, James, before we can do a short Q&A?
I can add just a couple more things and then we'll open it up for questions. Yeah. But I think Josephine brought up the key point, particularly in working inside these institutions, and we are working within the criminal justice systems in the countries where we work. And our role is skills for rehabilitation. And you could even simplify that and put it into different language and say skills for behavioral change. Because behavioral change is going to bring about the kind of changes in a person that once they're free, once they re-enter society, if they're provided with these skills, then the odds of them re-offending are much less. So as part of what we're doing is we're actually contributing to public safety. And when you look at the term rehabilitate, so to rehabilitate in English means to restore. So what better practice than yoga to bring into an incarceration environment? A yoga practice offers the possibility of restoring mental, emotional, and physical health. And that's the way that we approach it. We don't go into spiritual aspects of yoga when we're teaching in these environments. We're working with multicultural, multi-religious populations. So we maintain a secular approach, and our approach is for general health and for social change and social well-being. We're very clear, particularly in working in these environments, of what our mission is. And it's interesting because when I first started out 18 years ago teaching in adult facilities, there were very little yoga programs in prisons in the US. I'd like to think that we've had a great deal to do with the expansion of that. I wrote a book called Yoga, A Path for Healing and Recovery that was self-published in 2010. And we've made that book available free of charge to any prisoner who writes us here in the US. And we've sent almost 35,000 copies of that book free of charge to prisoners here in the US. Josephine just finished writing a book called Freedom from the Inside, a yoga guide for women, a yoga practice guide for women. That will be available probably in the beginning of next year. And it's what's interesting about, particularly about that book, is not only is that a very good book for any woman who is incarcerated, but it's a very good book for any woman who is engaging in yoga, because it goes into a lot of the fundamental issues that women are dealing with in terms of their mental, emotional, and physical well-being. And of course, when you're working in this kind of an environment, you're working very openly with all these issues. It's not like in a public yoga class where, you know, you're the teacher and you have very little really dialogue with participants in the class. When you're going into an incarcerated environment, you have a lot of dialogue with the people who are participating in the classes. I think I'll open it up for questions. We may have...
I've got a few questions here. Someone has asked for a reference to the massive randomized study that Josephine mentioned. So if we could have that info or you could...
Absolutely. It's called Yoga in Correctional Settings, and it's been three different publications from that. It's been the largest randomized research study in the world on yoga inside prison environments. And we also saw a reduction of OCD symptoms in this one, and also as an add-on therapy for ADHD. So it's a really interesting research. I will add the link to this research if you
That's
like.
Great. That's so great. Yeah.
Definitely.
That'd be wonderful. That'd be there then on Facebook Live as well.
Oh, cool.
I'd be interested in reading that. Absolutely.
Yes, it's really cool.
Another question I see here is, how do you create a space that feels safe to inmates that might have never felt safe in their lives? And are you allowed to support them on an individual level, or do you have to stay very separate?
Do you want to answer that one, James? Or?
Two questions.
Well, I'll answer the physical part, and then I'll let you talk about, you know, working individually with people. But
yes, sure.
So even the way that we set up a room, that we set up the physical environment is very important. It's always set up in an oval so that nobody is behind anybody and everybody can see one another. There are lots of different aspects of the way that we teach that are trauma-informed, the language that we use, a lot of the ways that we interact with participants in the program. It's very, very important to giving them more control, something that they don't have. They have very little control in, you know, in their everyday life in that kind of an environment. So the more control that we can give back to them in terms of conducting a yoga class, the more we're able to empower them. So in terms of working individually with them.
Yeah, I can talk to that. Also, one thing that we really need to do. So I was mentioning the trauma on simmer, as we're calling it. So we have people who has been impacted by trauma most often since childhood with all of these mental health issues expressed. And then they are in an environment where they cannot really get away from the danger. So, I mean, you're in an ongoing possible traumatic environment as well. So we need to make sure that we provide tools for kind of discharging this accumulative stress and anxiety that's been built up. And that's one part of the safety, I feel, for them to feel safe in their own bodies, because they're coming into our classes like high-wired, you know, looking over the shoulder, and they're becoming like exteroceptive experts. So we need to get them, so how to get them to feel their bodies. So we're implementing a really practical mindfulness-based yoga, not like sitting and observing your thoughts and emotions and breathing straight ahead, because that can just be too much. We need to create this safety for these kind of inner explorative practices in a good way, like titrating drop by drop, you know.
That's great. So that segues into these two questions.
I was thinking also I could answer the individual, because I'm working with individual yoga therapy inside the isolation units. So I also work together with treatment programs over here and the psychologists. So we have a close relationship here in Sweden. So I'm actually able to to give one-on-one sessions for like panic attacks and trauma triggers and also depression inside the isolation units. And that's been a wonderful collaboration. Mm. So this is something that we really would like to kind of explore a little bit more and share these practices with the rest of the Prison Yoga Project eventually. So over here I can do that, but that's not internationally available. So. Mm.
So, two more individuals, sorry. So feeding into that, they want to know what kind of yoga, you know, so many different flavors of yoga. They want to know maybe more specifically, what does a typical session look like? And do you do hatha yoga with pranayama? Do you teach sutras, Gita, and how about yin? So there are lots of, you know, just choose.
Okay, go ahead.
You know, every session is different. We intuit every single week can be completely different. When you arrive at the class, you have to intuit what the need is, and we draw from our bag of tricks. Some of it is yoga. I incorporate Taoist movement into my practice with men because they find it it's much easier to engage them if I'm mixing in some kind of martial movements with the yoga. I'm a Iyengar, Ashtanga, Yin trained. I mix in maybe some Ashtanga sun salutations with a Iyengar standing poses. Definitely a balance of pranayama and meditation, which we don't call meditation, we call it centering. Once again, in respect for the fact that we're dealing with multicultural and multi-religious people. And oftentimes, as soon as you bring up the word meditation, what you'll find in an environment like that is, well, I can't meditate. And that has to do with how they were introduced to meditation at some time, like close your eyes, be quiet and be still and good luck. So what we're more focused on is what can people learn in a yoga class with us that they can make operative in their lives while they're incarcerated, and then that they can take with them when they leave prison and they re-enter society. So Josephine mentioned impulse control. Major, major focus of ours. How can we provide people with skills to deal with self-regulation and impulse control? Because impulse control is directly related to how are you going to deal with difficult emotions and how are you going to deal with addiction issues? So if you can really focus on providing skills, a multitude of skills, including discharge, which Josephine had talked about, but definitely incorporating conscious breathing and centering practices. Sutras and yoga philosophy, very, very little focus. Other than yamas and niyamas, very little focus on yoga philosophy.
That's great. That's very helpful. One more question. You ready to go, Kate? The other question was, how do people learn this? You have a minute, I think. But how do people learn this from you? And the question specifically was, if someone is interested in teaching inmates in their own country, what's the best way to go about learning that? And specifically from you.
So we have an online training right now that's really providing a really good platform for how to argue for bringing these practices inside the prisons. And you can find it on our website, so prisonyoga.org, during the training. So it's a foundational training. And that's going to be built on as well, touching more upon like how to kind of create a safe or a more kind of predictable class as well. So it's going to be building on that training, and we're also going to do like live trainings eventually. So that's one way of going about. And then you have that in your kind of tool belt, as James was talking about. It's crucial to know what you're going to encounter if you're going into a prison environment. Teaching yoga is not like anywhere in the world. So it's good to be prepared for what you are actually going to work with before you do that. So, and the Prison Yoga Project is a, I would say, a quality mark right now, because we are the largest international organization in the world providing these trainings. I don't know, James, if you would like to add something.
Well, the only thing, I know something that comes up all the time is people's concern about their safety going into an incarcerated environment. And I can tell you from the 18 years that I've been doing this work and working with many, many teachers in many different countries, I've never heard of anybody being accosted. I've never heard of anybody being harmed in when they go in to teach classes. I mean, it is, of course, you know, it's particularly when you first start going in, it's not the most comfortable environment, and it shouldn't be. You shouldn't feel comfortable when you first go in. And you should have a sixth sense that's always operational when you're inside of a prison. And Josephine, you might add on to that, since you know you teach in a high security men's prison and you've had this experience of.
Well, for me, I've been facilitating classes now, and I'm facilitating right now. It's going to be 21 classes a week. So, and I've only watched one serious incident, and I was nowhere near to being attacked myself. It was just like a fight in between inmates. So I've been feeling more safe on the inside than on the outside. And what I'm encountering is a lot of gratitude, a lot of expressed emotions towards how important this is for them. And also I share a lot of happy moments, and I also share a lot of love together with the women. So it's on the contrary from what you would expect in entering these environments. I feel that this is the most important and valuable work in the world that I can do, so.
Well, that's wonderful. That's really wonderful. I'm afraid we have to finish. And I want to offer you my gratitude and all of our gratitude for the work that you've been doing for so long. Really valuable. I'd heard about meditation being brought in, but I hadn't heard about the yoga. So that's really fantastic. Thank you so very, very much.
Thank you for having us. Thank you so much. We're honored and grateful.
Both very welcome. I want to introduce the next session, which will be at 8 o'clock. So it skips an hour. It's going to be with the presenter, Sabina Glass, the creator of Inner Body Flow. The topic is ambition, tracking traces of ambition in our embodiment practice. And I want to offer to people to go to the Facebook. Obviously, if you're seeing this on Facebook Live, you know there is, for each channel in the conference, there is an individual Facebook page. So there's a yoga channel page. Go there and interact and look at the past things that are there on the video. And I want to also suggest that you consider buying the package, which you still can, for a really great price at the moment. You can buy just the yoga channel, any other channel, or you can buy the entire library to have and hold and watch at your own leisure and pleasure. So thank you very much to all the participants and to our lovely, lovely hosts. Thank you very, very much. But one thing, top tip, do you have a quick top tip?
James.
Stay embodied. You're one of you. Top tip to stay embodied for everyone.
Beginning. Yeah. You know, the one that I always say is stay in your body. I mean, that's what we tell all our teachers is, when you start to feel nervous, remember you live in your body. Stay in your body, stay with your breath. That brings you back home every time.
Mm-hmm. Come to the center.
Yes.
Lovely. Well, thank you very, very much, both of you. It's been a really, really enjoyable hour.
Thank you so much for hosting.
Looking forward to your future work and to reading your book and the different pieces you've written. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Yeah, thank you. Really, really an honor to have you. When will your book be out, Josephine?
Sorry?
When will your book come out?
It's actually James that's co-writing it. So when will we release the book, James?
Oh, okay.
Not only me.
I'd say either toward the end of the year or beginning of next year.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So we've been edit. We're still in edit, you can say. Lost in edit.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.